You don't need to be Captain Loophole to figure out how to get 2 months free of CISO. CISO is the streaming site for comedy nerds. Watch this weekend's SNL and much more for free for 2 months with our promo code RHAP at CISO.com. That's CISO.com, promo code RHAP for 2 months free of CISO. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with some bonus coverage this week. And many of you longtime listeners know what's coming up here when we get to this point in any Survivor season. I saw in the Bravo's a Podcast patron Facebook group, it's AJ Mass O'Clock, because people know we get down to 13 players. We like to talk about the 13 archetypes of the Survivor season with the man who is the author of Yes, It's Hot in Here from ESPN and many other podcasts that you've heard him on, the great AJ Mass. AJ, how are you?
I am doing good, Rob. I'm excited to talk about this season. It's been a fun one so far, so I'm looking forward to digging deep into these archetypes that we do every year.
You got
to
dig deep, AJ. And of course, we're on easy street that you're here with us.
Please. No. I just got it out of my head. Please.
Yes. Yes. AJ, of course, that you have been podcasting with our own Mike Bloom, both on the Hamster Factor, your own podcast where you guys watch a sci-fi movie with a millennial and a Gen Xer.
Yeah, it's been fun to see how the perspectives kind of do skew into those two different directions. And we've been watching a few lately that Mike just didn't quite like as much as I did. And that's cool. It's all good.
Yeah, this is old.
I don't think I ever got that blunt of a Bloom, but he does go full Bloom from time to time on me.
Oh, wow. And then also, of course, you guys have also been covering Black Mirror on post-show recap. Should I get into the Black Mirror?
I think so.
How many episodes do I have to watch to catch up on Black Mirror?
It's, you know, they had two seasons that were only three episodes each. So this one is six episodes. So it's really not a big time commitment. It's an anthology, so you can, you know, pick and choose the ones you want to watch. Definitely listen to our preview podcast. We also did one for seasons one and two, kind of an overview. You can pick and choose.
Okay, all right. So I'll dabble into that. All right, AJ. So of course, the 13 archetypes came from your first book, How Fantasy Sports Explains the World, also available on Amazon, and we'll have the link in the show notes if you want to check that out. Can you just set up for our new listeners what this exercise is that we're about to do today?
Sure. Well, as part of the writing of that book, I was talking about fantasy leagues and how the people that you have in your fantasy league have to be of different personality types for it to be successful. If you kind of go in with everybody who thinks the same way, you get a very boring league. And I think a boring season of Survivor kind of is the same way. A lot of times, if everybody thinks the same way, you kind of get pagongings. You kind of get that groupthink, and you get a season that probably isn't as interesting as others. And when it works, when the casting works, is when you get down to 13 people, you get people who slot into these archetypes perfectly. And I think this exploration into whether or not the season fits into those, I think when we have found 13 archetypes and 13 people that fit perfectly, they tend to be really fun seasons. And certain archetypes are better skilled at the game than others. It doesn't mean that the number one archetype is always going to win, because there's always upsets in sports and reality shows and everything. But it does kind of slot them and rank them in kind of a projected order based on the role that they're playing within this society.
Yes. And to go off of that, last season when we did this, we were terribly wrong with some of the predictions that we made. If you go back and listen to our 13 archetypes of Ko Wrong. So hopefully past performance is not indicative of future results.
Well, I would say, first of all, it doesn't mean that whoever's in last can't win last year. But, you know, part of that was also, I think last year was just difficult for us to do because of the Caleb evacuation, and we didn't see anything of one tribe for three episodes. And then suddenly we were there at 13 because of the medevacs. And it was just like, we said that of the three girls, I didn't quite know because we'd never seen them in action. So we were very cautious in saying that Michelle could be Anna, Anna could be Michelle. Like, we didn't quite know where people would land. So I would say that last year was really just a function of if we had one more episode, perhaps things would have turned out differently. But hey, upsets happen, and hey, I'm glad it happened.
Because of the medical evacuation and tribal council in the fourth episode of Ko-Rong in an 18-person season, we got down to 13 after just four episodes. By contrast, we have seen seven episodes of Survivor Millennials versus Gen X to get down to 13 people. So we've seen almost twice as much of the season than we did the last time we did this. So hopefully our calculations should be more on point today.
Fingers crossed.
It's hard to be less on point. All right.
This is true.
And then, of course, we like to do our fantasy draft as well and really put AJ through his paces as a fantasy draft expert.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it works out really well and I end up with five of the final six, and sometimes, you know, I get pegonged. So,
yes. How did we do on Big Brother?
Big Brother, man, how did we do? I think it was pretty close this year.
Yeah, we do need to make a leap in our scorekeeping. So if somebody is interested in being the official scorekeeper in our AJ Mass drafts that we have three times a year, that I think that we have sort of lost the thread on that a little bit. So we do need somebody to come in.
I would probably say, I agree with you, we need a scorekeeper. I would probably say you won because I had Frank and Day, and so that didn't work out too well?
Yes, yes.
I'm not entirely sure.
I'm pretty sure I went with Nicole in my draft also.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes Nicole Stradamus as a player works.
No, I think I remember when we did this, I remember talking about how, you know what, Nicole was my winner pick in the start of the season. I think she's going to turn it on. I don't know if it's ever quite like what I was predicting at that point in time. Like, I think I thought that she was going to turn into, everybody was going to be like, yes, queen by the end of the season. And that, I don't believe, was the case, but it was still a Nicole victory. And AJ, did you want to talk about the 13 archetypes of Big Brother over the top as well?
No, I do not. I love Big Brother, but I am not paying to watch Big Brother. So it's as simple as that. And yeah, I know there's other ways, but I'm taking the season off.
Okay. Fair enough.
No pumpkin, no.
All right. All right, AJ. So let's get into the 13 archetypes. Do you want to let's give them from 1 to 13, and then do you want to set them up ahead of time? What's best?
You know, I think we've done this enough that I think we have enough loyal fans. So as we get to them, I'll describe them. But let's just give if people want to write down a piece of paper, we're going to go from 13 down to 1. In the order, again, this is not necessarily the order of where we think they'll be finished and who'll be voted out next or anything like that. It's just the best odds is if a person plays the game the best maximum way of these archetypes, this is how they should finish. But of course, we all know that never happens. So at number 13 is Fresh Meat.
Mm-hmm.
At number 12 is The Ninja. 11 is The Cheerleader, 10, Loose Cannon, 9, Narcissist, 8, Old Reliable, 7, The Second Half of the Marriage of Convenience, 6, Idiot Savant, 5, Captain Loophole, 4, X Factor, 3, Mad Scientist, 2, The Alpha or Dominant Part of the Marriage of Convenience, and number 1 is The Diplomat.
Okay. All right, AJ.
And we'll explain each one as we go.
Let's talk about number 13, the Fresh Meat. And of course, this is the person that we say knows nothing, has the worst chance to win the game. And of course, last season was, who did we land on?
Can we not discuss last season? It was the winner. It was the winner. Yes, it was Michelle. But I think I still stand by it.
It sounds like a bunch of malarkey to me.
Well, it does, and I apologize, but I also think the winner was not really her, but we'd want to go down that road.
Well, please, AJ, this week of all things, let's not contest the winners of anything.
All right, I'll tell you at the time. keep you in suspense. So Fresh Meat is the person who really doesn't belong out there, I think is kind of the best way to put it. It in years past, it has usually been someone who has been perhaps a recruit or someone who clearly has shown no evidence that they've even seen an episode of Survivor. I think casting did a really good job this year overall, and I don't really think there's a true fresh meat in terms of someone who has no business being out there and doesn't know what they're doing. I actually thought all 20 people, for the most part, seemed like they had an idea of what they were getting into. And so I don't think we have a traditional fresh meat here, but there is one person out there, I think, who probably has eyes bigger than their stomach in terms of this experience, probably doesn't really fit the bill of a Survivor, someone who perhaps, even though they love the show, probably would be better off if they had stayed at home on their couch where it's a little less stressful. And doesn't really go into panic mode as much watching the show.
I thought you were going to Jessica when you talked about the eyes.
No, metaphorically, not necessarily literally there. But yeah, I think when we talk about someone who seems to just be in way over their heads, I think that's a good description as well. I feel bad every time I see Hannah on the screen. I really just don't think she's meant to be on Survivor. I think she means well. I think she's probably going to look back on this experience and say it was the time of her life. And that's great. But I mean, if you're having panic attacks watching a competition, and if you are, you know, that whole obliviousness when she's like, can we talk about this now? No, just give us a few minutes. But I really want to talk about this now. And okay, I'll wait until later. But let me just say, like, all right, Hannah, just please. She's fresh meat as far as I'm concerned.
Use me.
Yes. Okay. Fresh meat, Hannah, number 13. Yeah. I mean, I could see it. You're right that this is a very tough season to figure out who a fresh meat is. And I think that that's one of the really fun things heading into this merge, that everybody seems to have their feet under them to some degree. So yeah, I can see it. There's just nobody who's like your traditional fresh meat of like, what is this person doing out there? I guess I feel like the other person that you could go with in this spot is potentially Will, just because he's so young, but he does seem to know the game to some degree. So it's just there's no perfect fresh meat.
Right. And of course, as we go through this, I mean, there are certainly different people who could slot into many of these categories. It's just a question of which one do you get the right slotting of 13.
Right.
13.
Right.
You know, certainly if you put Will there, then where does Hannah go? And, it's a domino effect that sometimes steers you completely off course. And you know, like I said, I think one of the things of fresh meat is also that even though they're 13, that comes to like, do I really think they can win in the end? And most of the time, I would say the answer is no. But you often will get to the merge and say, well, why would I want to eliminate this person now? So they don't finish 13th. You know, Hannah will be here for a while because she's not a threat physically. She's, you know, so she'll end up lasting a bit longer than the 13. But generally speaking, I don't really think fresh meats ever have a true case. I just think, you know, last year, you know, if you switch Anna for Michelle last year, then I think everything works out fine. And maybe one more episode, we could have gotten that on the head. So,
bro, I know.
Okay.
I know.
All right. AJ, let's talk about number 12 on your list. And of course, that is the ninja, the person that is on the show, but it would be the last that we would remember if we tried to rattle off all the names.
Yeah, you start to list everyone on the show and you're like, and, you know, it's the purple person. We can also call this the purple ninja. You know, it's the person who is just not getting the confessionals. You know, obviously, you know, I thought this was going to be Lucy for the longest time, because where was she until her boot episode? Up until this last week, I think this, I don't even remember seeing much of two people. I think Brett and Sunday were certainly a pair that I completely forgot were on the show. They were always just in the background. I didn't really hear them speak in confessionals all that often. And there was so much stuff going on with the millennials. You saw them a lot. And with the Gen Xers, there were other people who were far more interesting that we were dealing with. So Brett and Sunday kind of immediately became the background people for me. And even though last week we focused on them because their tribe was playing a big part in terms of who got booted, I still don't feel like they're really that essential. I think they'll both fade back into the background for this week and beyond. There's not a lot of interest there. And so considering he's such a big person and he could be a Tony Vlachos kind of type, you know, in terms of a storyline, if he had any personality, Brett to me is the guy I keep forgetting about.
Brett.
So he's my ninja. Yeah.
Okay. Brett the ninja. I think I probably would have gone Sunday and gone the other way with this, just because I think that Brett at least had the storyline this week about, is he the cop? Is he the funeral director?
And I thought it was still from Hannah's point of view. Like, mm-hmm. It wasn't even from him. Like, we didn't even see him defend it so much. It kind of happened while he was gone.
Right. Right. And I thought he had a lot in the first episode. I thought he was going to be sort of like the breakout personality from this season after episode one, because he was really all over the mm-hmm. first episode. So, all right. I can't knock it too much. I think it's probably he's one of the two places you could have gone with this. So, all right. Brett the ninja. Should he have said he was a ninja instead of a police officer?
Probably. He probably would have more of an interesting backstory than the funeral director stuff. Although I will give him full marks for his performance at Tribal Council, because I didn't think for an instance that Michaela was going home because he didn't give anything away. And I thought that was really an impressive performance. He had me fooled. And so kudos to him for not, you know, saying stick with the plan or something stupid like that. But he did very well in that. But then again, I'm rewarding him and complimenting him for pretty much staying invisible.
All right. Well, maybe it might make more sense for why Brett is the ninja when we talk about number 11, the cheerleader, AJ.
Yes. And the cheer, I think you see this coming down the pike as well. The cheerleader, it tends to be someone who is either someone who's like, you know, anything for the tribe and loyal to a fault kind of tribe, rah, rah, or more to the point, who ends up being the tribe mother, the tribe caretaker, someone who has kids at home and brings that kind of personality and, hi, I'm mom, look at me. And I think there's, we've already mentioned her, his partner in crime. This would be Sunday.
And I feel like my kids that are millennials, they'll give anything a try. They'll try it with anybody, and they'll try it 80 different ways.
Yay!
Yeah, and I think Sunday, you know, she just kind of has that perfect archetype of being the motherly type. And even on a cast full of theoretically older people with the Gen X tribe, that a lot of people could have slotted in there, she really was still the only one who fit into that kind of role.
Yeah. I mean, you always talk about with the cheerleader, who is the Dawn Meehan in the group? Mm-hmm. And I think that she's probably pretty close to the Dawn character that we've had in a few seasons. I mean, she has not been crying like a Dawn, but just in terms of just like the general vibe of that character, I mean, I think that that's a pretty clear cut. That's who it is.
Yeah. Cheerleaders either are the Dawn Meehan type who people are upset when they betray them because they are so like motherly, or they're the Lisa Welchel type who, in addition to being a mother, she was more like, we can never betray each other. And she lives that, you know, but still it's this kind of motherly loyalty kind of thing going on.
All right, AJ, then number 10. Okay. One of my favorites, the loose cannon. Now you got some loose cannons to choose from.
I am so disappointed here with the loose cannon, because we all know who the loose cannon was going to be. I had this permanent markered in for several episodes now. And I mean, if you're going to be calling out Jeff Probst in the middle of a tribe swap, if you're going to be like throwing shade in the middle of a challenge and cheating for the other team, we all know Michaela was going to be the loose cannon. And I thought this was going to be the easiest pick of the entire thing. And of course, what? She goes home.
What?
Yes.
You didn't do this right, Jeff.
No. No.
No, Jeff did not do this right.
Do you want to weigh in on that real quick, AJ, while we're here talking about the move to take out Michaela?
You know, I could see it. I could see it in the sense that, you know, I was thinking when Jay was talking about it and kind of floating the idea out there, I mean, it did occur to me right away, like, this is really your best chance to get rid of her. You don't want to run the table, her to, you know, pull a Joey Amazing and run the table and like start winning challenge. So I get that before the merge, it might be the easiest time to do it because she's definitely not expecting it. And you know, she doesn't have the idol. So I can see it. If you're going to do it now is the time. I just don't necessarily know that I would have done it because yes, she was thinking, you know, the four of us and you don't trust her and she's going to beat you at the end, but there is still time to get her out. I think other people would have seen her as a threat too, and she would have been a meat shield for Jay. I mean, she's so good at the challenges that they certainly would have gotten her out before they got Jay out, and he had an idol. If he didn't have an idol, maybe yeah. I could see it. I think it was probably too soon, but I understand the thinking behind it. I wasn't like, oh my God, what are you doing? You're insane. I think it was a bad move, but I understand the logic behind it.
All right. Let's talk about who the loose cannon actually is going to be.
Yeah. Well, no, the loose cannon in many seasons, it's someone who is going to be, you know, someone at the drop of a hat, personality could swing on a dime and can just go crazy. I don't think we really have anybody left who is going to be that. But the loose cannon is also someone you can't fully trust because you don't know where they're going to swing from vote to vote and whether they're going to be on your side or they're going to go right behind your back and try and connive and flip on you based on something you said or just based on an emotional impulse or anything like that. So in that sense of the loose cannon, and I recognize that it's not as strong as it has been in past seasons just because Michaela was such a loose cannon, but I think that we're going to have another millennial jump right into that void, especially once we get to the merge. I think Michelle is going to fill that void.
Michelle is the loose cannon. Interesting. Yeah.
I just don't see where her head is at in terms of being loyal to anybody. And I think she's already proven when she went, you know, kind of like turned right to Cece and tried to like just tell her what to do and like things like that. I've seen enough loose cannonness in her. And certainly she didn't play that way because Michaela was playing that way. And, you know, you can't have two loose cannons going head to head. That just doesn't happen. One of them always goes in the first few episodes. So I think now that there's this kind of void for someone who's going to like play the game to just tell the truth no matter what, and the truth is okay, and whatever party.
It works well, AJ.
Always works well. I think she's going to be the one we're going to be scratching our heads at going forward as to what is she doing and why is she doing it. And in that sense of the loose cannon, perhaps not the vocal sense, but certainly in terms of the gameplay sense, I think she's the only one left who really fits the loose cannon mold.
Sometimes it's just like square peg meet round hole.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Then let's talk about the narcissist, AJ. And where do you want to go with the narcissist?
Now, I grant you there are probably a couple of possibilities here, but the narcissist is someone who thinks very highly of themselves, thinks that they're going to win, usually very physically fit, is a beautiful person, but they know they're a beautiful person. and they play as if because they're a beautiful person, they deserve to get, you know, fealty. I think we've seen a lot of that coming to bite those narcissists in the butt, which is why the narcissist is so low, because even though they are generally a physical threat, they also are arrogant enough to turn people off. I think there's two people this season who are definitely in the narcissist mold that are still left. I think one of them is Ken. But I don't think Ken is your normal narcissist in that way. I think he's very, very different in terms of his humility, or at least his the way he plays the game, and he's more into like, oh, I want to work with the intelligent people, and like he's not all about his body. I think more to the point, I think Jay is more of the narcissist, especially in his confessionals. It's all about, you know, hey, you know, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do it and I'm going to win and I'm smart and I'm great and I'm wonderful and everyone else is a moron. And I think that to me is much more, the arrogance is much more there in line with Jay. So in terms of the fact that he does have the physicality, the arrogance, I think, comes along and certainly the move he made with Michaela, it was a form of arrogance in a way. I think he's thinking whatever move I do is the one that's going to turn out to be the best move in the long run.
Now, talk through for me, because I'm sure a lot of people are saying, why not Taylor?
You know, Taylor fits another role a lot better. And I just think Taylor, if it's kind of funny because if Figgy were still around, Taylor and Figgy clearly would be the marriage of convenience because they were a power couple.
I don't know about that, AJ.
I think
that's complicated.
It is complicated. If they were still around and Instagram photos hadn't been leaked, I think they definitely would have been.
I mean, I'm pretty sure Jeff Probst offered to make them the first ever survivor marriage of convenience, and he said no.
I
think, you know, wouldn't that have been wonderful if we actually would have had a marriage of convenience? But yeah, I think definitely because he's been in this power couple, he hasn't had a chance to be arrogant for his own gameplay. He's been playing for somebody else. And I think part of the narcissist's raison d'etre is to play for yourself and nobody else. In that sense, Taylor has not been anything narcissistic. If anything, you know, you get into relationships like that and you give up your own game for your partner. And so that is as anti-narcissist as it comes.
So Jay is the narcissist. Do you feel like that Jay is going to be around for a while still in the game? Or do you think that, not to tip off your draft board too much, but I mean, he's kind of low here in number 9. I mean, it was only a couple seasons ago that Jeremy Collins won the game from this slot.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with having an idol automatically boosts your chances from where you are. And yeah, Jeremy had an idol and Jay has an idol. And I think when you have that idol, it not only does it, you know, you're a narcissist, you're winning, you know, and you're winning challenges because narcissists are never kind of, you know, schlumpy. You know, they have good bodies and they can perform in the physical stuff. You know, if they go after him and he susses it out and plays his idol at the right time, people are sometimes gun shy to go right back at the person. So I think he can last a long time, but you know, if you have people who have been doing a lot more strategic stuff, they can perhaps argue their way better in a final tribal council, and it all comes down to numbers at the end. I think narcissists make it to the end a lot, because you know, but you get down to final 4 or 5, they become a primary target, and that's why they maybe don't make final, but they last a long time.
And AJ, how did you know that the vanity license plate on my car is schlumpy?
I've been in my spy shack watching you. I hope you didn't notice that spy shack I set up outside your apartment.
No, I didn't. I thought that they were doing construction.
hey, construction.
Yeah. All right.
No cops around, just construction workers.
Number 8 is Old Reliable. And no, we're not talking about Alex Kidwell. So the Old Reliable on this season now is Gen X old?
No, Gen X is not old.
Yeah.
I say, knowing that I'm older than almost everyone on the show. Except Paul. No, you know, Old Reliable is not necessarily an old person. Generally speaking, we have found that Old Reliable is just someone who what you see is what you get. They don't have any necessarily subterfuge or cunning in their game. They wear their hearts on their sleeve. They're really good in the challenges. We have noticed over the years it ends up oftentimes being a good old boy or someone who fits that kind of role, that they tend to look the same. It tends to be a casting archetype. I'm sure Angie has a name for it that is consistent. And yes, the Old Reliable more often than not is this kind of good old boy. And we have one still left. From the beginning, I was eyeballing him as Old Reliable, still around and still fits. So we're going with an old Oklahoma football player in Chris.
Okay, Chris is Old Reliable. I thought that maybe he might have ended up in the marriage of convenience, but no, here
it was close.
Chris Hammonds in the Old Reliable spot. Last season, you had Joe Del Campo in the Old Reliable slot.
Yeah, sometimes old fits.
Yes, sometimes it fits, but perhaps maybe fresh meat might have been the better spot for Joe.
Yeah, although he, you know, lasted a lot longer than I thought he was going to, even given that role, you know?
Yes, although maybe was it maybe not so fresh meat that ultimately did him in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You should not be a meat collector when you're Old Reliable.
Truer words were never spoken. All right. So anything else on Chris as Old Reliable?
No.
Were you aware of his career at Oklahoma?
No, I really wasn't. I mean, they've been a lot of athletes. I don't follow the college game all that much. So if they don't go into the pros, I don't know, you know, just this whole Big Brother infatuation with these baseball players like of recent years. Like, I don't know. If they don't get drafted and make the majors, I don't know who they are. So, you know, I'm going to know who Jeff Kent is. We'll discuss David Wright later.
Yes.
But, I don't know who he was, but he certainly looks like he would have been a football player, and that certainly he's improving his medal in the challenges, no doubt.
Okay. AJ, this brings us to the back half of the Marriage of Convenience.
Yeah, and we will not discuss this person now because whenever we reveal the identity of Marriage 2, most people most of the time can figure out who Marriage 1 is, so we save it to the end. But this is generally where the Marriage 2 slots, because not only are they the beta and you know, if the marriage both get to the final, usually the one who's considered the leader will end up beating them. And also, when it times gets to the final four, final five, and they cut their throat, well, two goes. So it's harder for the Marriage of Two to win, even though oftentimes they can make it to the end simply by riding coattails.
All right, so then we'll skip number 7 and we'll go to number 6, the Idiot Savant.
Yes, now, and Idiot Savant does not necessarily mean idiot. But sometimes the shoe fits. if the bandana fits, you wear it. But, you know, this is someone who is making all the wrong choices in the game. Probably should have been eliminated episodes ago. Just you watch them play and you just go, there's no way this person could win. And yet here they are, still there, and possibly in a better position than they were last week. And you say that every episode. You know what? I don't think they did anything right this week, and yet they're still here and probably in a better position than they were last week.
Unlikely.
Exactly. Yeah. Very unlikely. And yet still they are here. They were in a power couple and their power couple goes because they were foolish enough to announce it to the world, even though they probably everyone knew anyway and they thought they were hiding and they weren't hiding. And yet Taylor is in a better position because Figgy's gone, because he's so much less of a threat now. And, you know, as we saw last week, he started endearing himself to some Gen Xers, and who the hell knows?
Yeah. So he did seemingly mend some fences with Ken and with Jessica. And, you know, based on some of the stuff that they were saying, like, I think that there is some possibilities that there could be a relationship there. I don't know if it's necessarily a done deal like I had thought coming out of that Adam vote, that they were definitely going to go after him next.
Yeah, and you know, and perhaps that's just one of those editing situations where, you know, they say, well, we could go with Taylor, or we probably going to stay with Adam, and they just cut out the probably going to stay with Adam part. I mean, we all know that that happens as well. But I don't think he's in a bad spot, because who's going to be afraid of taking him to final?
Yeah,
it's
well,
not
that's
like
the thing.
Anyone's going to think he's going to argue his way past them.
It speaks to this idiot savant role where people are not going to necessarily target him because they say, yeah, but look at it. He's not going to win. Who's going to vote for him? So you sort of like keep him around and he could potentially, you know, be there for a while.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Is it possible that you get to the final tribal and Fabio wins? Yes, it happens. Mm-hmm. We've seen it happen. You know, I'm sure if Eric had made it to the end, you know, given up his immunity and made it to the end, he would have had a fighting chance. But he did that to himself and lived up to the first half of this name. So, you know, sorry. I mean, I like Eric, but come on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then let's get to our top five, baby. Number 5 is the Captain Loophole.
Yeah, and Captain Loophole, which is, of course, the Rob Sesternino of it all, you know, this is the person who just knows the game, knows the rules inside and out, really understands the strategic half of Survivor, and is able to consider every decision based on a full knowledge of the game, knows the history, and sometimes this person may not be is integrated socially into the group, and that's the downfall. But you're never going to outthink this person. And so I think we have not only seen this person wear their strategic card on their sleeve, but they've also made very smart game moves as the knowledge of the game. And I think Adam is totally filling this role.
Okay.
The move to break up a power couple, even though you're in the majority, that was the right move. And getting Figgy out, I think, proves that he knows what he's doing out there. And of the people left, I would think he's probably the most I know this game kind of person who's making the right decisions in that regard.
For a Survivor super duper fan like me.
Yes. Well, that comes along with being a super duper fan, AJ.
Exactly. It was one of these days, what are we going to get next season? The super duper duper fan?
Well, I don't know how you could be a super duper duper fan.
I don't know. I mean, you could have been a Miami Dolphins fan in the early 80s. See, I'm dating myself as a Gen Xer there, as a very old Gen Xer, Mark Duper, Mark Leighton, Miami Dolphins. Anyway.
Yes, yes. Wow. So, Adam, the captain loophole, I mean, he is thinking about the angles. I mean, we saw him back early in the season trying to sell Michaela on a plan that he had figured out. So, yeah, I definitely could see him as a Captain Loophole. I feel like he had a couple of different options to go with here, but I think Adam is a fine choice.
Yeah, and I really think that there's no other place he fits, too. This was, like I said, there are other people who could fit here, but I don't see any other place for him because, he hasn't been a ninja, certainly. He's been front and center as a fulcrum vote. So I think this is pretty much where he has to live.
You know, I love the fulcrum vote. All right. Number four is the X factor.
Yeah, and the X factor is always the person who is
Gen X factor.
Not the Gen X factor, just the X factor, the person who is different from everybody else. And there are many different ways that a person can be different. It could be some sort of physical difference. You know, maybe someone is deaf and nobody else is deaf, to throw back to your season. Mm-hmm. Could be someone who is, really short, everyone else is tall. She was someone who is old and everyone else is young. Obviously, age is you wouldn't think would play a factor here, but we do have someone who is, even on a millennial tribe, is young and completely different. I mean, we have never had someone as young as Will on this show. And as such, his experience on the show is completely different than anyone who has ever played this game. We're talking, once you start getting people who are born after your season, I mean, come on, this is uncharted territory. As to someone who is this young is going to deal, even on a tribe with quote unquote younger people, he stood out as young. And so I think Will is definitely different than everybody else.
Yeah. Have you been impressed with the presentation of 18-year-old Will so far?
I think he's done very well. I think, he does remind me a lot about Spencer in his first run through, because I think Spencer also was very young for his cast. And I think, going back a second time and playing, he did far better in terms of knowing what his shortcomings were. And I think Will is still, he's still discovering himself. He doesn't know what his shortcomings are. I think he's really done very well for himself. I haven't noticed him stand out as, oh yeah, you young kid. Once you get but there is some of that there. And I do think that once the merge comes, because there are so many Gen Xers left, they can't help but treat him as a kid. And I don't know if that could work in his advantage too, but I think he stands out like a sore thumb.
I think so far through seven episodes that I'm going to use a different fantasy analogy, where a lot of times in fantasy you have a player that you say, especially a quarterback, you say, oh, he's a really good real life quarterback, but he's not a great fantasy quarterback. And then you'll say vice versa, where somebody's a really good fantasy quarterback and then not as great of a real life quarterback. Not mentioning any players in Jacksonville, but I feel like that.
I would have gone with Joe Flacco, but yeah, I hear you.
But I feel like that Will, so far, I think he's probably playing a better game than he is being great television. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think so. He's definitely, because of his age, he's naturally going to be a follower. And he's not going to make any moves on his own. And when you automatically slot into that kind of a handicap, it's going to hurt your game. On the flip side, I think people are going to see him as loyal, but is it loyal because you are a loyal person, or loyal because they think you're a loyal little brother puppy dog? I think that might come into play and hurt him. But I think he's done well. Could he have been the ninja? Yes, I think in terms of being a ninja, he had a big chance. But I've noticed him because he stands out as being different. So that's the only reason I didn't put him as a ninja.
Yeah, I think it's hard to be self-aware, which is a really important thing for success in the game, and also be good TV. Like, I think it's easy to go out there and just be an idiot, and then the camera is going to be following you all over the place. But I think that to have the self-awareness and be so young, I think it's hard to, you know, be able to then also be, you know, engaging in terms of like saying witty things in front of the camera and also not coming off like a dumb person. I think that's a very hard thing to do with so little real world life experience.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's really, like I said, it's hard to be someone who is trying to fade into the background in game and yet trying to stand out in the confessionals. And that takes a little maturity. And I you know, if he comes back in a season, you know, of All Stars, not that he's done anything that would warrant that at this point, but, you know, if he were to come back in 6 years, I think he would be a far more interesting player.
All right, then let's go to the mad scientist, AJ. Who is your mad scientist? I have a guess.
Yeah, well, the mad scientist is someone who is never content with the status quo, is someone who is going to try really outlandish and bizarre gameplays, who is going to upset the apple cart in places where you're like, why are you upsetting the apple cart? Mm-hmm. It's not so much the same thing as the loose cannon. The loose cannon is coming from pure emotional. The idiot savant is doing things because they don't know what they're doing. The mad scientist is generally a neurotic person who can't play this game without making a move and doing a move and looking over their shoulder and, yeah, tell me if someone is watching us, because I need to know. I have to look for the idol. Don't tell anyone I'm looking for the idol. I have the idol. I have to play the idol.
Holy crap.
Yeah. I think we may not always think the moves are right, but David certainly is.
Yes.
David, you're right! David, you're right!
I mean, to a T, David is the mad scientist. And to play your idol before the merge on somebody else who doesn't even know you're doing it and never had any loyalty to you is, like, insane, but seemed to work for him. And, hey, when you find another idol again, it doesn't matter, does it?
AJ, I still just can't get over that the David Wright Survivor career is potentially as more longevity than the David Wright baseball playing career.
I mean, yes, I hope we should see David hopefully back next season, but for how long, who knows?
Hold on, is this a spoiler? Do you know something about season 34?
No, Met season 2017.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay. Hold on. Just wanted to check, AJ. Okay. So, AJ, the mad scientist, are you feeling okay about David's chances to potentially turn this thing into a win? Like, could you see a Cochran-esque win for him in his future? I mean, he's at number 3 here in the rankings with the mad scientist.
It depends. I mean, if he were to make final, it would have to be one of these things where he goes with two people who are not on his side going forward. It's going to be this weird thing where just the jury has to be stacked in his favor in just the right way. He's certainly no chance of being unanimous. It's going to have to be one of these, you know, 5-2-1 type vote kind of things, or 5-2-2s where the two millennials split and the Gen Xers kind of just stick with party unity or something like that. I don't think he's even going to own his own gameplay in the final tribal if he makes it there in a way that's going to make people feel good about voting for him. But nevertheless, that's kind of part of his charm. I think people like him. They like his neuroses, and they're not going to hold it against him at the end. So it's not going to be like a Russell Hand situation where if he just owned his play, he probably would have won one of his two finals, and just he couldn't own it in a way that made that people feel good about voting for him. I think David will own it, but he'll own it in a way that is self-deprecating. And I think that'll work for him. You know, do I think he makes it to the end? I kind of think he does, and I'm basing that on the edit. He certainly goes deep into the game, I think. But then again, he could also get voted out tomorrow, on a drop of a hat, because that's the way the cookie crumbles in this game. It's the one thing I like about Big Brother more than I like about Survivor is the fact that the edit is live. Mm-hmm. And you can't read anything into it. And when we watch Survivor, they do a great job of putting episodes together, and they're getting better and better each year. And I think they're playing with us as the audience a lot more now than they used to. So it's harder to predict based on the edit. But you know that they know who's in the final, at least. At least they can edit towards the final. So I have the feeling that he at least makes it to final five and mm-hmm. possibly four. You know, who knows at that point. Who drops a ball at the last minute and ends up going out rather than staying in. But I see good things for him. He's certainly fun television.
Yeah, but that being said, prior to this week, how far did you think Michaela was going?
Yeah, well, exactly. All the way, right? I mean, mm-hmm. she definitely was someone who was going to be a shock boot. I certainly didn't think pre-merge or she's in the final. I mean, look, if Michaela had made the final, I would have had a hard time as a viewer not having her win. It doesn't mean that the jury would have felt that way. But, I mean, certainly if Michaela had made the final, I would have wanted her to win.
Okay, AJ. Let's get back into the marriage of convenience. We only have three people left that we haven't talked about. We have Zeke, and we have Ken, and we have Jessica. Zeke has not been on the island with either Ken or Jessica at any point in time. So I think it's reasonable to assume that the combination of Ken and Jessica will form a marriage of convenience.
Yeah, and I think they already have. I mean, yes. But no, look, the fact that she should have been gone, but, you know, David plays this idol on her, and she immediately runs to Ken, which just made no sense at the time. She tells him, hey, I've got this superpower, and I'll give it to you if I'm voted out. I don't know what she was thinking there, because that just gives him incentive to vote her out. But nevertheless, now that they're on the tribe together, and they're kind of this twosome and working together, I think they've been thrust into the situation where they're probably closer than most other pairs on any other tribe, really. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that was planned. It just kind of happened organically. That's kind of what the marriage of convenience is. If it's not something that, like, you know, romance drops out of the blue and you know, romance allegedly isn't planned. I mean, sometimes you watch Big Brother, you think it is. But on Survivor, generally speaking, you know, a power couple like that just kind of happens. And this is a marriage of convenience. They yeah. were put together, and it just comes down to, at this point, who you think the alpha is and who you think the beta is as to who gets the bump.
So AJ, last season you called the Aubrey and Neil marriage of convenience, and it was a matter of who is the alpha, who is the beta. You correctly picked out that Aubrey was, and this was, you were higher on Aubrey here than anybody should have been after four episodes of Survivor Koran.
Yeah, you know, blind squirrels get nuts every so often. Absolutely. That was how I read the situation. I sometimes, you know, you watch these shows and you get to see, just because I'm looking for these couples, I think I sometimes see the dynamics a little bit more closely because I'm paying attention throughout the season. You know, in a second watch, I think people will see that Aubrey was definitely, I mean, he left a lot earlier than we thought, but nevertheless, I think, to me, it's not 100% here. I think you could argue the alternate side, but I think Jessica is the alpha here. And even though Ken is the alpha personality, I think in terms of when it comes down to decision making, I think that she is going to have the upper hand, A, because I think Ken is going to be far more willing to just go with the flow and just go, okay. I think her personality is much more, no, we can't do the other thing. Stick with what I think. So I think that's going on there. And I think that the fact that she has this superpower, that we don't know what it is, but I think that he's going to probably defer to her because she's got the superpower and she could always, you know, leave it to someone else if he screws her. So I think that gives her an element of power that perhaps she wouldn't have if she didn't have this mystery thing.
So Ken, you have as the beta in The Marriage of Convenience and Gen X Jessica as the alpha in The Marriage of Convenience. Do you think that that will sit well with Ken?
Well, hey, man, whatever. You know, I'm going to go talk to some millennials and try to get a new alliances going here.
You know, what's with these millennial power rankings? Why do I have to be the beta when I was growing up, I would have been the alpha?
You know, I don't have many impressions this year. It's a sad thing. It's like none of these voices work for me. I've been loving your Ken, by the way.
Thank you, AJ. I appreciate that. So we'll see. So, yes, would you say that in this relationship, would that make Gen X Jessica the Barbie and Ken the less popular Ken doll?
I think so. I don't necessarily like the way Jessica's
playing.
Why
does it have to be called Barbie's Dream House?
Because you're a nightmare, Ken. You're a nightmare.
No, AJ.
allegedly. I think Jessica just I don't like the edit she's been getting, and it scares me to put her as the alpha based on the edit, but you know, whatevs. Hashtag don't care. Hashtag blessed. I don't know. It's like I just think that she, given that she's an attorney, and like, you know, generally the attorney would definitely be more of the loose cannon type, or the narcissist type, or, you know, maybe a Captain Loophole type. And she doesn't seem to be getting an edit towards any of those things. So I'm glad she's in a partnership here, because otherwise I would have been hard pressed to find a spot for her. But she's definitely in this two person alliance. And I don't understand strategically what she's doing. However, I think perhaps once the merge comes and we get to the individual play, I think she's definitely going to be more proactive. It probably will seal her fate, but I think she'll be more proactive in looking for playing other angles.
Okay, let's talk about number one in your rankings, the diplomat. There's only one spot left. Last season, it went to Anna Kate, and then she was promptly booted the following Wednesday.
I blame shenanigans on the extra exile person, but nevertheless.
Yes, yes. All right, so let's talk about the diplomat, Zeke.
Yeah, I think Zeke is doing a nice job of not like going all in on these alliances that formed in the original tribe breakdowns. I think he's definitely been open to, you know, working with Gen Xers, with necessarily, you know, going with millennials is not, I'm a millennial, I have to be a millennial. You know, he's formed a little bond with Chris, formed a little bond with David. You know, he's working it. He's the only person on the millennial tribe who has done a really good job of integrating himself into the Gen Xers. I mean, Adam formed this alliance and with Ken and Jessica, and we saw right away, they were like, yeah, but maybe we should go with Taylor. It doesn't seem like it's a bond out of friendship or anything like that.
Friendship.
No, you're going to be pissed if Zeke goes home. But, you know, Zeke seems to really be bonding with them. And as such, he's going to be the only person who can really, if it becomes a swing vote, he's in a perfect, he can get the numbers to where he's the swing. He can go a long, long way in this game. And I think he's got enough inroads on both sides that I think he's in a good spot.
Yeah. And it's interesting because that there are those two Gen Xers on the tribe, but they're not really friends with each other. It's a little bit of, I always like to make the comparison to Sex and the City, where none of the other women really ever hang out with each other. They only are friends when they are hanging out with Carrie. And Zeke is like the Carrie here, where that you have, he has a relationship with Michelle, he has the relationship with Chris, and he has the relationship with David, and none of the other ones are actually friends with each other.
Yeah, it's the perfect spot to be. If you can get to the point where no one notices that you're conspiring with the other tribe.
Yes.
A lot of times the swing person makes such a show of it that people are like, what are they up to, kind of thing. You know, Cochran put himself in that situation But if you put yourself in a situation where like you're still friendly with both and no one really cares that you're going back and forth, it's the right place to be.
I will add just one other thing, AJ, on my Sex in the City metaphor, that the Vanua brunch is a lot different than the Sex in the City brunch.
Oh,
I could binge, baby.
Where are Mario Cantone and Stanford when you need them?
All right. So that's our list. That's our top 13. Just to reset it one more time, the fresh meat is Hannah. The ninja is Brett. The cheerleader is Sunday. The loose cannon is Michelle. The narcissist is Jay. Old reliable is Chris. The marriage of convenience 2 is Ken. The idiot savant is Taylor. Captain Loophole is Adam. The X Factor is Will. The mad scientist is David Wright. The marriage of convenience number 1 is Jessica. And the diplomat is Zeke.
Well said. Well said. Yes. Yeah, I think it slotted in pretty good this year. I had an alternate universe list, but it just kind of never quite fit into place the same way. So I'm happy with this. And it's been a really fun cast this season. And I don't think there's anybody in here where I'm like, well, I guess they're here and I really wish they weren't still on the show. And we get that a lot. So it's been fun.
Okay. So here we go, AJ. Why don't we get into our annual or a triannual fantasy draft where we go through all of this? That, do you want to reset the rules for our fantasy draft? And can you reset them for me?
Oh, my goodness. That would require me to know what's going on. All right. So I know we give 1 point for every week that they stay in the game.
Yeah, actually, I have it on the page from last season. So 1 point for every week the player makes it through without getting voted off. They get 2 points for winning immunity. They get 2 points for playing the hidden immunity idol. And is that if they play it on someone else, like if Jeremy played the idol on Steven, or is it only if they play it on themselves?
Yeah, no, it's 2 points if you are the one to present the idol at tribal council. So if you say, I'm playing this for Steven, or I hand it to Steven and say, here you go, buddy, that's Jeremy. If you handed it to them before tribal council and they say, ha ha, I've got it, then it's the ha ha person.
Okay. And what if they whiff on it? What if it's like, I'm getting voted out tonight, but I go and I'm going to play my idol on you?
It's playing it. It's just playing it.
I still get the points?
Yeah.
If I got voted out?
Yes. It's a farewell gift.
Okay. All right. 3 points for making it to the final tribal council and 3 points for each vote received at the final tribal council. So a couple seasons ago when I drafted Jeremy Collins, that was a big payday. Not only between him playing all those idols, but also 10 votes to 0-0 for Spencer and Tasha. So that
I would have won with just 2 votes for Spencer. So that hurt.
Yes. Okay. So that person that gets a lot of votes at the end, that's a real windfall. All right, AJ. So we'll do a snake draft. And I've learned that some of our listeners that they only know of snake drafts from listening to this podcast.
Well, that's pretty cool. And you might learn something along the way.
Okay. All right. So, AJ, I will defer the first pick to you.
Okay. And then I will have 1, and then you will go 2, 3, and so on and so on. There is no pick 13. Someone will be left off the board. That kind of adds that element of mystery to this. So,
yes.
All right. So, you know what? I am going to... Look, I've had fun watching him. I don't always go with the diplomat, but I really just like Zeke. I think he's fun. So I'm going to start with Zeke.
All right. Starting with Zeke. That's a very strong call there from AJ. All right. So now this is where things get tricky. I think that we're probably thinking along the same lines of the people that we think are going to potentially go far into this game. So I am going to go with, boy, it's tough to see too many winners that are outside of, you know, that one grouping that we are forecasting. So I'll go with number 2. I will go with David.
Mm-hmm.
And then number 3, I will go with Adam.
Okay, very good. All right. Well, then I'm going to switch around to the complimentary strategy is to get the people who I think can win a lot of immunities, perhaps play idols. So I will go with the double dip of Jay and Chris.
Jay and Chris. Oh, my original winner pick this season. You took him off the board.
Just to go a little
Jay
physical there.
And yeah. Chris. All right. Well, that I think that you made a mistake by leaving your marriage of convenience unprotected. And
maybe.
So I will pick them both up in one fell swoop. And just for the sake of the draft order, I will make Jessica our first woman pick at number 6 and then take Ken at number 7.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
All right. So
two picks in a row now for AJ.
Yeah. Well, all right. I am going to, tough at this point. I think I am going to go with Brett.
Okay.
In the hopes that people forget about him. And Hannah, because I think she might get dragged along a long way and to get those points.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah. On that note, Sunday is someone that we've always talked about as you could see her in the final three. So I will take Sunday. And then we are down to Michelle, Taylor, and Will. I will take one of them. You will take one of them. And then one will go undrafted. I think it speaks to the strength of the season that there isn't really anybody that it's like, okay, oh, I definitely don't want that person. Maybe one person. I will say, just to talk through where my head is at.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Michelle could potentially do well in the post-merge game. I think that she has probably the best track record so far of the people we're talking about. But it's hard for me to imagine a scenario where Will is going out immediately. Even if millennials start getting picked off, I feel like that people won't worry about him. I will take Will with the 11th pick overall.
Yeah, which leaves me to choose between Michelle and Taylor.
Which Triforce member do you want?
Wow, that can go either way, can't it? I just think perhaps Michelle's going to say something really stupid. We know Taylor's going to say something really stupid, but it's not going to be taken that way. It's going to be, it's Taylor being Taylor. I think Michelle, just
prove
because
that.
She's so into this honesty thing, I think that hurts her chances of being in an alliance with anybody else. So I'm going to go with Taylor.
Taylor and Michelle goes undrafted. Wow. What an upset.
I might regret that last one, but so be it.
Yeah. Well, there is a track record on this podcast of not having a good read on Survivor Michelle's.
This is very true.
That is very true.
Bro, I know.
Yes. Okay. All right, AJ. So just to reset the draft. So Team AJ is Zeke, Jay, Chris, Brett, Hannah, and Taylor. Team Rob is David, Adam, Jessica, Ken, Sunday, and Will. There you go.
And I think we both would have made Michaela the first pick if she was still in the game. Probably.
Yeah, that would be a very strong pick that she would potentially be also winning the challenges and stuff like that. So very good.
What might have been.
What might have been. All right.
What so, might have been. Yes.
Yeah. All right, AJ. So, of course, you could follow the great at AJ Mass on Twitter. Do you have a hashtag for this outing?
Hashtag for this outing.
One thing I wrote down was hashtag schlumpy.
Oh, you know what? That's got to be it.
Okay.
There's no way we're gonna top that one.
Okay. AJ, so what else are you working on besides, okay, it's fantasy football season. Are you enjoying this season?
I work so hard. I get a little bit too focused. And even though the Giants are in second place, they're not that good. So it's been kind of hard to really get into the, plus all the injuries. It's just been brutal injury season. So running backs dropping like flies. I'm working this fantasy football season. So I'm enjoying it, but I'm glad it's halfway over and glad we're going to the home stretch here. I'm looking forward for baseball season already. I have found a newfound love for baseball over the past 2 years. And this the World Series was just phenomenal to watch. And so I've just got a little bit more spring in my step for that sort of thing.
Yes. Have you been in contact with any of the Cubs mascots? Did the Cubs have a mascot?
The Cubs have a very recent mascot named Clark, who they just kicked off a couple of years ago, pretty much around the time they started getting good again. And coincidence? I think not.
They got the mascot and then ultimately won the World Series.
I think so. I mean, I feel bad for my buddy Dan Kilday, who has been the only person to wear the slider mascot suit for Cleveland. He's been doing it for a good 26 years now, and he really needs to retire soon, but he just wanted to make the World Series one more time, and I think he'll probably hold out hope that they get back next year and try it again, but I feel bad for him because this is the second straight time they've made it to a Game 7 extra innings and lost. So.
Wow. Well, this is a huge development in the world of mascots, and for more into that the furry and woolly world of mascots. Do I have the subtitle right for Yes, It's Hot in Here?
Weird and woolly.
Weird and woolly world of mascots.
We don't discuss furries. That's a different thing.
That's something different. I apologize. You could, of course, catch both those titles on Amazon. We'll have links in the show notes as well. And AJ, if people want to hear you and Mike Bloom talk about these sci-fi movies, what do they do?
Yeah, just look up on iTunes and try and find The Hamster Factor. We're also available on Podbean. You can check us out there or just follow us on Twitter. And, you know, we're not shy about tweeting out when we have a new episode up. So definitely you can do that as well.
All right. Well, AJ, always a pleasure to hear from you. And of course, definitely AJ is always very responsive on the Twitter with all of your comments about the podcast. So don't be a stranger at AJ Mass. And of course, we have just posted the latest Wiggle Room. I'm going to be having David Bloomberg's conversation about why Michaela lost. And then we will get back up to the top of the lineup here with the Survivor Week kicking off anew with our first post-merge episode this Wednesday night. Very exciting, AJ.
Yeah, it is. And good to hear David Bloomberg back into the regular rotation. We go way back to the days of his website. So good to hear him back in the vault.
Did you used to blog on that website also?
I did. I started probably with, I remember doing Survivor China, and I did it as a kind of a parody of The Art of War. Mm-hmm. And then I did a Big Brother season where I did it all in Dr. Seuss rhymes.
Wow.
So yeah. So I had a lot of fun with that back in the day. So I've been doing this even before you. So it's been a long, long stretch of Survivor commentary and recaps. It's been fun.
AJ, will the third book you do be a memoir of all of the different interesting things that you've done?
Well, the second book is pretty much a memoir of the mascots. It's a history of the mascots, and it's a memoir of me as Mr. Met. I do have a third book kind of batting around the hopper. It's not quite fully formed yet. I think we're going to go in a different direction, but it'll certainly have a sports angle to it as well. So
okay. All right. Will you be showing Mike Bloom old baseball games from before he was born?
I might show him new stuff. That might be the new twist. I'll show him stuff that my son likes. And if you guys haven't noticed, you can go to my Twitter feed. You can see my son dressed up as Jeff Probst for Halloween, totally of his own volition. And actually looked pretty uncanny.
Jeff didn't say anything back about that.
Jeff didn't, although Spencer told me that it was the most horrifying thing he's ever seen. I think you know, the image of Jeff Probst, you know, snuffing his torch is still probably a little raw for him. So
yeah, okay, all right. Well, I am very much waiting to read about what Mike Bloom's thoughts are on the Immaculate Reception and much, much more. AJ, thank you. Always a pleasure to do this. And look, this is the last time in 2016 that we're going to do one of these.
Yeah, we'll get back and agree to do this again when we're under the top again instead of over it. So
there we
forward.
Go. All right, AJ, take care. Have a good one, everybody. Bye.